First, to the selection of an Australian to head the $100 billion Green Climate Fund. It's one of the crucial bodies in international green finance that has the express purpose of trying to keep the temperature increase on our planet below 2 degrees Celsius. The Green Climate Fund was established by 194 nations, Australia included, and it's funding projects in developing nations to limit or reduce greenhouse gas emissions and adapt to the effects of climate change. Howard Bamsey will be the man in charge of the fund when he formally takes up the role next year. Now, for most of us who haven't heard of Howard, he's had a long career in this field. He's the former Director General of the Global Green Growth Institute. He's represented the Australian government in international climate change negotiations, and he's a former Special Envoy on Climate Change. So good morning, Howard, and congratulations.
Thanks very much, Geraldine.
How important would you judge this Green Climate Fund to be in terms of the sorts of projects it will fund?
Oh, I think it's extremely important. And there are at least two dimensions to that. Firstly, the most obvious one, and that is that it will provide essential public finance from developed countries and use that to leverage further investment in the areas that you mentioned in your intro. And that's really fundamental to transforming the global economy to one that doesn't interfere further with the climate. So in other words, to transform the global economy to a climate-friendly trajectory.
Just a small mission, Howard.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. No, it's hugely ambitious. There's no doubt about that. But this is a time for ambition, I think. It is a time of opportunity because there's recognition all around the world that this is a task that needs to be done and that it's not impossible. It can be done. And this, just to finish responding to your first question, the other dimension, and it follows from that, of the importance of the fund is that this understanding that developed countries will assist developing countries to transform their economies, that understanding underpins the whole international climate change process. Mm. So it's really politically very important too that the fund succeeds.
Well, we certainly remember, those of us who remember the Copenhagen and the vexed discussions there and then the Cancun follow-up, which really turned, it seemed to me, on that gulf, perceived gulf between the developed and developing world. I have been looking at some of the projects that have been funded already and they're quite incredible with amazing sums of money attached, Howard.
Yes.
They're quite diverse. What would you single out?
Well, I think they're all the ones that I'm aware of are very important. I should say, Geraldine, just to be clear, that I can't speak on behalf of the fund. I'm not yet the executive director, and I've never been to a board meeting except for the 10 minutes when I was selected.
But ahead of 400 others, they say.
Oh, so they say. Mm. So I can't be definitive about what the fund has done, but I'm really excited by almost all the projects that I've looked at, and they're very different. There's a very substantial one that the board approved recently in which it provides funds in collaboration with the European Bank for Development in sustainable energy financing in a large number of countries.
Yes.
And this is the sort of leverage that I mentioned earlier. So there'll be all sorts of other sources of finance as part of this project as time goes on.
Sorry to interrupt you, but like the one that struck me, there's a whole range. They cover renewable energy, agricultural innovation, flood management.
Yep.
For instance, there was one that really struck me, $80 million for Universal Green Energy Access Program in conjunction with Deutsche Bank, for instance.
Yeah.
And
then
there was one in Eastern Madagascar, $53 million US dollars for sustainable landscapes in Eastern Madagascar. And I mean, so on and so forth.
Yep.
Look extraordinary. I have to say, I thought, my gosh, how are they going to control the corruption that must be a major issue for you distributing this sort of money wisely in some of those countries?
Well, there are some new emphases, I suppose, is the way to put it, that the fund is adopting. And one of them is country ownership. And that's really pretty fundamental. It's something that hasn't always been part of the development assistance picture, because, you know, some countries feel that some of the established institutions are not sufficiently sensitive to what the country itself wants. And it was very clear from the beginning that everybody wanted this fund to be different in that respect. And so the country ownership is very fundamental. And I think that will, well, at least it holds the prospect of making a big difference to how countries see the process, their involvement in this process.
So you're going to have to work with their systems or ramp up their systems then, I take it.
The fund supplies the financing to a range of different, I'd like to find a different word, but I think the word they use, entities, is probably the only one that fits. There are 41 of these entities that have so far been accredited by the fund as the channels for its financing. And those entities have to demonstrate very strong fiduciary standards and meet other criteria in order to be accredited. It's a quite rigorous process. And these entities will allow countries to gain direct access to the fund so that the whole project that is approved and that these entities get funding for, the whole project will be truly owned by the country concerned. And that's pretty new.
Right.
Maybe not unique, but it's pretty new. And because of that, there's a lot of attention being paid to the standards of the entities that have been accredited.
Which is very good to hear, but I noticed that Giles Parkinson, writing in his Renew Economy, made the point that in the year since the fund began approving projects, less than 1/20th has been committed, and just $5.4 million has actually been disbursed. So, I mean, the aspirations are there, but what about the actuality of it?
Well, they have now, as a result of the last board meeting, their total that's been approved for funding is over $1 billion US. It's about $1.1 billion US.
Right.
And that's not a bad score for a new fund. And if you compare it with the rate at which other now very well-established organisations started, I think it's looking pretty reasonable. And it will ramp up. The board has set an aspirational target for this year of approving $2.5 billion worth of projects. That's certainly not out of reach.
Is impressive. I mean, and I stopped you saying that it was, by the sound of it, public and private, which is a nice segue, because there's big developments internationally on climate change and renewable energy. I note, for instance, that Australia's biggest investment bank, the Macquarie Group, is bidding for control of Britain's £4 billion green investment bank. So I wonder what you think this interest tells us.
Well, I think there are a number of things that are fascinating, actually, about this topic just at the moment. In the last couple of years, thanks to a range of different initiatives that were sponsored by governments and also by companies, there's been, I think, and most people I speak to who have been around doing climate change for a while agree with this, there's been a real turning of the corner in the last few years. And what I mean by that is that the notion that the future economy will be different from the past is now very widely accepted. It's reached a sort of point of where the burden of proof has reversed. And I think, as I say, this is a common perception that I've encountered amongst people who've been doing it for a while. So what we've seen, and I think you can trace it back to particular activities. For example, the Lima Paris Action Agenda, which won't mean much but to most people, but was an important global focus for business activity in the last couple of years. The leadership that the French provided last year in the run-up to Paris, work that the Secretary General, the UN Secretary General and his office did, all these things contributed. The US and China agreeing on an active approach to solving the problem all these things made a big difference. And I think the momentum is now very well established.
And I think you mentioned to our producer there's quite a few Australians involved in this.
Yeah. Now, that's one little interesting element that I can't trace to anything in particular, but it is nevertheless the case, I think, and I've been saying this long before I expressed any interest in the GCF position, but it's the case that as you go around the world, there are Australians involved in the climate finance picture with surprising frequency. You see them in all sorts of places. The Climate Bonds Initiative, for example, is led by an Australian. There was an Australian in the Asian Development Bank years ago who did some very important and interesting work on new financial instruments to deal with climate change. There's a legal firm whose Sydney practice has probably been the leading climate change legal practice in the world for almost 20 years.
I've interviewed them.
Yes, Baker and McKenzie.
Indeed. Look, I'm just going to ask you a final question then. So if we've got all these Australians, as you say, you know, lift a rock in the green finance world and you find an Australian underneath it. If they're all interested in this, how does that sit with the domestic debate we see here in Australia about climate change, which is very different to that?
That's right. There's a lot of volatility in the policy debate in Australia, and that's been the case for a long time. But meanwhile, you know, there are all these Australians, and it's not just in the climate finance area. There are all sorts of other areas in which Australians have been playing a role in the transformation of the global economy. And I think it shows that the sort of headline stories about disagreement over policy are only part of the picture. There's a very important process going on in the private sector and beyond that is quite different. And I'm in no doubt that things are really changing in Australia as elsewhere.
Well, Howard, clearly you'll be in the thick of it. I really appreciate your time and good luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Geraldine.
And Howard Bamsey is the incoming Executive Director of the Green Climate Fund. And you might have also noticed yesterday, thinking of good news, a landmark international agreement, The Guardian reported, to create the world's largest marine park in the Southern Ocean has been brokered here in Australia after 5 years of compromises. The first marine park created in international waters, and possibly a precedent.